Hello, and welcome to another episode of Tactical Startup. This week, we have Liz Miller. She has been working as a law practice management consultant since 2015, has over 30 years experience working with lawyers. She began her career in New York City as a legal secretary in January of 1979. 2 years later, she obtained her paralegal certification from the Paralegal Institute of New York in 1985. She moved to Tampa, Florida, where she continued with her career until 1988 when she opened Paralegal Professionals. She worked as an independent paralegal for lawyers specializing in plaintiff's personal injury work and medical malpractice. In 1997, Liz segued her career into law office administrator. She obtained her bachelor's degree in business administration and then pursued her master's degree in business administration with a specialty in finance. Through a series of career transitions, Liz opened from lawyer to law firm in 2015, helping lawyers with the administration of their law firms, including billing. Liz Miller is a member of the editorial advisory board of Law Office Manager magazine. She writes blogs for the magazine and has also done several webinars, including one on billing collections as well as one on trust accounting. Her professional affiliates include the Hillsborough Bar Association, the Solo and Small Firm Practitioner Section of the HCBA, the American Bar Association, and the Society of Human Resource Managers. In February 2022, Liz wrote Hacking Billable Hours. The book teaches lawyers, no matter what the firm size, how to contemporaneously enter billable time so that clients can receive bills once a month. The book was number 3 on the bestseller list within a week. In May of 2017, Liz wrote the bestseller, From Lawyer to Law Firm, How to Manage a Successful Law Business. This book was also number 3 on the bestseller list. In it, Liz details starting a new firm and how to hire staff, write policies and procedures, do trust account reconciliations, and so much more. Currently, the book is being used as a textbook at Cooley Law School. Liz helps lawyers focus their time and energy on practicing law and taking care of their clients and the lawyer-client relationship while she takes care of managing the business of practicing law. Check out her website at fromlawyertolawfirm.com or her Facebook page. She's also on LinkedIn. Let's get started. Let's get talking to Liz. You're listening to Tactical Startup, a podcast dedicated to building amazing businesses. I am your host, Taylor Darcy. In this podcast, we explore ways to innovate, improve, and level up your business through sales, marketing, automation, and business planning. Successful businesses pivot when times are bad and stay the course when times are good. We will have guests from different walks of life to help you see that success is not only possible, but even probable, no matter when or where you start. Through hard work and strategic planning, you can have the entrepreneurial life you've always dreamed. Tune in weekly to level up your business. Hello, Liz.
Hello, how are you?
Good, how are you?
I'm doing awesome, thank you. I love your entry with all the strategy and growth and everything. I think that is so neat.
Thank you, I appreciate that. So, I actually, my daughter's name is Elizabeth, so I'm a very big fan of the name. She's Elizabeth Darcy. So I had to bring that. I had to let you know that it's funny though, is I also teach business law at a community college here in San Diego or Chula Vista. Mm-hmm. And my boss is named Elizabeth. And so when I talk to my family about, oh, my boss Elizabeth, and my daughter's like, what? It's just kind of funny. She actually spells hers with an S instead of a Z. So my boss. But anyway, so I'm excited to have you on here today. You've got a lot of experience working as a law practice and management consulting. And tell me about the struggles that most law firms deal with that you see.
How long do you have? No, I'm kidding.
No, you're fine. You're fine. Don't worry about it. I totally get that.
Probably one of the biggest struggles that law firms have are billing clients, even if they're not doing hourly billing, whether it's flat fee, whatever it is, collecting their money. That right. is a very big issue with lawyers. Right. I'm not really sure what the problem is or like what goes on in their mind for why they're not more, you know, try to collect the money harder than they do, but you'd be surprised at the amount of receivables that some lawyers have.
I wouldn't say I'm surprised because I hear about stories. I can tell you firsthand, there's a couple of reasons. And if you can work your way to dealing with this, you would be making some serious coinage. Number one reason I see that there's an issue with collecting is number one, a lot of people have this weird misguided notion that all attorneys are rich and so we don't need the money, and so they don't want to pay. That's the other thing. So that's the first thing I know. And then the other thing I know is about collecting is that attorneys are constantly worried about getting bar complaints. Mm-hmm. And they know that if they try to push someone to pay too hard, that that's a fast way to get a bar complaint or potentially get a bar complaint. Now, do those things ever actually happen? Yeah, I'm sure they do. Do they happen regularly enough to the point where that you shouldn't be collecting for the work that you've earned? Or you know, done, then I would say it's probably not as significant, but the fear is there, which oftentimes is more significant than the reality, especially because we're paid to look at problems all day. So what is it that you teach people about the billable hour? Because I know there's a lot of information out there about in media, but for listeners that aren't familiar with law firms and the billable hour, can you break that down for us?
Yeah, absolutely. Attorneys, it really boils down to one thing. They need to keep track of their time, right. And they need to do it contemporaneously, which means finish a task, write a time slip, finish a task, write a time slip. And I know people have these odd notions like, oh, I'll do all my billing at the end of the month. They're not going to write it down as they do it. And they think miraculously on the last day of the month, they can remember everything that they did. Well, I'll be honest with you, and I've said this before, I can't remember what I had for breakfast yesterday, much right. less what I did 2 weeks ago. Yeah. So, you know, you can imagine, if you will, how much time gets lost when you do billing once a month. There's phone calls, there's emails that you don't think of. A lot of the time is lost. And yeah. and then what? You know, and it does add up because 0.2 and 0.3 over a whole month can sometimes add up to you know, to a lot of money. And I did want to address your, you know, thing about everybody thinking that lawyers are rich and, you know, whatever. I think that's a very small percentage of attorneys that are really that well off.
Right.
And I think everybody gets the idea that we're all rich. I mean, I've heard it from me, and I'm not an attorney, but I've been working in this field forever. So somehow it probably rubbed off on me or something, right. You know, and as far as people being worried about grievances, I think that's a twofold problem. One, you know, if lawyers actually keep track of their time contemporaneously, you know, when a client has a bitch fest over a bill, you know, if I were the attorney, I'd say, hey, go for it, you know, because we kept meticulous records.
Right.
But I think the other fault also lies with the bar.
Right.
For at least in Florida, for getting involved in fee disputes, you know, and so that's why that threat is always hanging over attorneys' heads.
Yeah. And I think... Yeah, as I think as you mentioned, the twofold issue with the the, you know, keeping a contemporaneous record of it, right? Because when you do that, you're less likely to misremember something. So on the one side, you're probably not, because there's always that fear that attorneys are inflating their bills, right? And so to some degree, that's true. Not that they are, but I'm saying like that the fear of that being true, right? Because what happens is when they're doing it non-contemporaneously, then there's that misremembering things, not that you're saying you're purposefully doing it, but you're saying, oh, I think I spent, right? Like, or I think, as opposed to I know, rather than dealing with the, as you do it contemporaneously, you're more likely to get it accurate. It's going to be a more detailed account of what you did than if you don't have that in there. So tell me about, like, as far as why did you make the transition from paralegal to law practice management? What was your goal in doing that?
Well, to be honest with you, when I first started working in a law firm, ultimately my goal was to go to law school. Okay. I mean, I wanted to be an attorney, but you know, my home life and just a lot of things were not, you know, it's not something I talk about a lot, but I didn't get the chance to go to college and go to law school right after I got out of high school. So I kind of worked my way up, you know, from legal secretary, at least that's what they were called back then, I went to night school and became a paralegal and eventually became a law office administrator. And I got the great idea, let me try this because I think it would be a business. You know, I think that there's a lot of attorneys out there that can use the help. And I just turned it into a business. Would I like to go to law school still? Yeah, if I was 20 years younger, maybe.
Well, to be, you know, fully candid, I went later in life myself. And so I had a career before I went to law school. And really what it came down to, because there was, and while I'm in a different situation than you're in, I'm not suggesting we're the same. I found that, you know, if I'm on my deathbed, I was going to regret not going more than I cared about when I went. And so for me, this is just me. I needed to go for that personal fulfillment reason. I knew that if I didn't, I would regret it to that point. And so now there are moments when I'm not so thrilled with my choice to have gone to law school because of some of the stuff that you have to go through. But overall, I love being able to help people in the capacity that I do. And here's the other thing. I knew people that were way older than you that were in law school that decided that they wanted to go to law school. And I'm not saying you should, and I'm not trying to say you shouldn't. I'm simply saying don't let age be the deciding factor behind whether you decide to do something or don't do something. And I'll tell you why. My mother, who was 63 when she passed away, always wanted to go to college. And she always, that was something that she regretted continuously up until the day she died. Literally, she regretted not going to college. And she was just as smart as anybody that I'd ever met in college. And here I am, her son, and I went to college. I've got a bachelor's and two master's degree and my law degree. But my point was, is don't let age be the thing that keeps you from being what you really, really want. Now, debt, on the other hand, that one I can understand and get behind, because the debt to go to law school might be not worth it at that point. But so what attracted you to law practice management? I mean, like, you could have stayed where you were at and, you know, been perfectly successful and happy and doing paralegal stuff and legal secretary work and all that stuff, which it can be very rewarding as well, especially for personal injury. But you decided to take it to the law practice management side. What sparked that? What was like the, let's go next?
I have a great affinity for the legal profession. Mm-hmm. Obviously, they've been very good to me all these years. And I really enjoy helping lawyers build their practice and, you know, just it's just being a part of something, you know, mm-hmm. like when one of my clients opens a law firm and they get up and running and, you know, we've done everything that we need to do or whatever. It's a very good fulfillment for me that I did something too, you know, that we started this firm. And you'd be surprised how many people I've actually helped get out there and open their own law practice. There's like three people that come to mind right now. So I guess if it was kind of like I wasn't going to practice law, I'm going to get as close to it as I can.
Sure.
So, you know, and I do think about regret, and I do think, you know, my husband has always told me, you're going to regret it. One day you're going to regret it. And I don't know, maybe I will. Maybe having this business and doing what I do will make up for it. I don't know. Ask me when I'm like 85.
Well, it, you know, and everybody's journey is different. Like, honestly, legit, like if you were... Like, you know, there's those kids that are straight out of college and into law school, and there's nothing wrong with that. But at the same time, the wisdom and knowledge that you have could be absolutely crucial, right? Like you being able to impart your, you know, as much knowledge as you have into others is a solid way of building your brand, right? Like from a branding perspective. You would be great to brand at your own firm, if you chose to do that, or if you chose to work for somebody else. So, what besides collecting and billing properly, what is it like? What's the wisdom that you would share? Like, if you were starting a business, not just necessarily law firm, because I don't want my listeners to think that that's all. You know, law is harder in some respects and easier than others. To start, because we know that there's a demand for it, you know, the markets already exists for it. But, you know, getting known is difficult. What would you share as far as like, how would you start a business that wasn't necessarily law related?
I think that the most important thing that I would tell somebody that wanted to start a business is never give up. Never give up as hard as, you know, it may seem, and it may seem like, oh, you know, I'm going to walk away from this. I'm not, you know, persistence. Never, ever give up. It worked for me. I mean, and it can work for anybody. You know, when I think back to when I started this business, I was making less money in this business than I was as a paralegal.
Right.
And anybody would go like, what are you, crazy? You know, you traded one for the other and what did you get? But, you know, now come to me 7 years later and ask me if I think that I made a good choice and that I never gave up. Yeah, I did. And when I think about some of the things that I've done over the years to, you know, to make money and to promote myself, I think to myself, oh my gosh, how did I do this stuff? Like, right. You know, but I'm telling you, it's just never give up. Never give up whatever business you're trying to start. Never give up.
Yeah, I think, and that's an issue that I think is true, because I think there's a certain lack of commitment that a lot of whether it be law practice or, you know, law firm owners, Or just business owners in general lack. It's like they love the idea of being in business for themselves, but then when the reality hits, the struggles, the ups, the downs, the oh, you know what moments where you're just like, am I going to make payroll next week? Am I going to be able to cover this debt that I need to pay off? When those moments happen, they start doubting their choices because they're like, well, I didn't really think about that one. I thought it was going to be, you know, 0 to 60 and all hunky dory, and everybody was going to pay, and everybody is going to be, you know, they're going to want me, they're going to love me. And the reality is that's mostly true. That's not completely true, right? Like, people are going to love you, but then you're going to have people that don't love you, and then you're going to have people that pay you, and then you're going to have people that don't pay you. And so you have to figure out ways to solve those problems, right? Like, how do you get people to pay you by, you know, and we, it, like I talk about what's called keeping ahead of the game. And it's basically you get paid, you know, incremental things over time rather than trying to get it all at once. People balk at huge bills as opposed to small bills, right? So, you know, if you're, and then you're less invested in it, but I digress. So, you know, never giving up is important, but along the way of never giving up, what steps would you take to help improve the likeliness of success, right? There's a statistic out there that says 75 to 90% of all businesses fail in their first right. 5 years, right? And while that's somewhat true, it's not completely accurate because there's a lot more that goes into it than just blanket statements, right? Like there's businesses that fail that are because of this reason or that reason, and certain industries are more likely than others. So what would you see? What would you tell people besides not giving up, which is a great, absolutely. What would you tell people along the way to get there, to help improve their chances of not failing?
Believe it or not, writing a strategic business plan is very important. You know, you need to put, and it's not okay to just walk around with this information in your head. You know, whether it's a computer or a pen and paper or whatever, you know, write down, what do you want to do? How do you plan to get there? What are the benefits, you know, like my nephew just started a new business, you know, it's mm-hmm. knife sharpening and whatever, you know, and I told him, write down a business plan. You know, what do you have to contribute to this business? What is your experience? What are their strengths and weaknesses and opportunities? And, you know, write everything down. Where do you plan to be in 3 years? Where do you plan to be in 5 years? What's working against you? Because that's how you deal with everything. If you have it in black and white, whether it's on the computer or written down or whatever, you know, you need to know. And if you think really hard, you can come up with these ideas of strength and weakness. You know, like a strength may be, like for me, you know, I know a lot of people in the community. You know, what is a weakness? Well, I'm not really out there. So I would need to overcome that. And that's really what you need to do, is just sit down and think about everything and use that business plan like it's a Bible. It will get you where you want to go.
Yeah, I think that's so important. Planning is very, very important for success. You know, and it's interesting because I did a business plan for my MBA, and it was for law practice because that was what I was intending on doing with it. My MBA is in financial management as well. But the interesting thing is I'm in a lot of entrepreneur groups, and one of the things that I see a lot of is they disregard academic thoughts, pursuits a lot. Like, and I'm not suggesting that you have to say that this is an absolute way to do thing or not an absolute way to do thing. But the issue is they think, well, I'm just going to wing it, or I'm just going to fly by the seat of my pants. Like they don't look at the numbers and say, does this make sense from a money standpoint, right? Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, while it's great to want to be an entrepreneur and it's great to want to help people and develop ideas and solve problems, at the end of the day, you need to get paid, right? Like you don't get paid, you don't get money, you don't live, right? Like you're not going to be an entrepreneur very often. So if you don't set up a system, a way to make sure that you're getting paid consistently, then you're going to be out of business working for somebody else rather quickly. That isn't to say there won't be lean months, there won't be difficult months, but the idea being that you can't let the romanticism of entrepreneurship outweigh the practicality of earning money, right? Like you need to put, you know, there's a book called Profit First. I haven't read all of it yet. I started reading it. It's on my bookshelf to read. I've got more books to read than I have time to read them. But it, you know, it talks about the, you know, strategies of, okay, where should you spend your money? Developing that profit. So if you can't afford something, rather than trying to spend everything so you don't pay taxes, right? You're going to worry about taxes after you've profited, right? You're not going to spend money that you don't have just for the sake of spending money.
Right.
Sometimes that's easier said than done because of the way the tax code is written, but that's a whole different topic for a whole different day. Tell me about, like, what, as far as you solve a unique problem for a law firm, for law firms, right? How many clients do you have? I'm just curious.
I probably have about 12 regular clients that I do work for. And then I have people that will say, hey, can you write a policy and procedure manual? Hey, can you do this? You know, sure. So I have things coming in between.
Okay, cool. And what has their growth been like as far as, like, how have you helped them grow? What did they start out at, and when did they, where are they at currently? Roughly. You don't have to give me exact specifics.
But. No. I started one client in particular that comes to mind. I went to work for him in December of 2015. Okay. He was a solo practitioner with a paralegal and an attorney. That year, which really I was not, because it was December 3rd, so obviously I didn't have anything. He made $300,000 in 2015.
Wow.
Guess how much money he made in 2018?
$3 million.
You're a little bit. He made $957,000.
Okay.
That's with an attorney, a paralegal, and himself, three people.
Okay.
So to me, that is an amazing turnaround.
Sure.
You know,
sure.
And a lot of my clients are just like that, you know, to get systems and procedures, policies in place, get things organized to where the attorney's not doing payroll or he's not, you know, doing conflict resolution or whatever. I have one client up in New York that he has just turned the corner of making $10 million.
Nice.
Yeah, he started out at about $2 million. We added some people, we did all kinds of things, and right now he's at $10 million for this year.
Nice. And, so, and he was at, you said $2 million when he started?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Very
yeah.
Cool. Yeah. What does his staff look like?
He has two attorneys working for him and himself. He has four paralegals and a receptionist.
Okay, so small firm, but still good size.
Yeah, small firm. Well, I need to add a little caveat there. His office is in New York, so he's probably, you know, I'm sure they're charging $600-$700 an hour, at least for the partner anyway. But still, that's not a bad turnaround considering that 3 years ago he was at $2 million.
Yeah, that's not bad at all.
Oh, no.
What else? What? Like, there's always something, like, I talk about, you know, how to improve your business through, you know, using know, like, and trust. That's one of the reasons why I do this podcast, is because I want my clients to get to know me, or potential clients. But I also want to promote businesses. That's the other part, is because I want my listeners to hear stories that they can relate to, and some can feel that they can be successful too, that there's, while there are things that are more likely to make you successful, there's no secret, right? Like, it's not, you know, so many of these gurus pass themselves off as gurus and they say, this is the secret. I'm going to sell you the secret for $10,000. And while they might have a good education about it, like, they might have shortened the time period for success, it's not really a secret, right? Because it's more of a process of learning. That yes, you may get there faster with that person's knowledge, but you're not going to, it's not a secret, right? It's typically breaks down to very simple things. Do good stuff repeatedly over time, right? Like, it's really a lot simpler than a lot of these gurus make it. What success tips would you have? What are your things that you recommend to your clients to help them build their business?
Well, first of all, you spoke about these gurus, and I'm sorry, I just have to say this. If you had an understanding of how you could become a millionaire, like they, you know, advertise, or a multimillionaire, would you sell the secret to everybody else, or would you keep it to yourself? Okay. I would keep it to myself. I'm sorry, but that's just me.
Right.
Okay. Right. So I don't think they're getting rich off of having these $1 million or multi-$1 million law firms. I think they're getting rich from selling you their secret.
Right.
Okay. That's where they're getting rich. And to me, it's just a joke. So I think, going off on a tangent, I forgot what your question was.
Oh, just I wanted to just get your, like, how do you grow? How do you help your businesses grow? What is it that you tell them, what works, right? Like, that's what I'm getting at. Like, I'm not expecting you to obviously share every bit of knowledge. We don't have that much time, but you know, it's like, I like to share the things that work with people so they understand that I'm right there in the trenches with them, right? That's one of the things that I enjoy doing. But yet, what works? What helps your clients develop from a $2 million to a $10 million firm, and from a $300,000 to a $900,000 firm?
Billing is very important. Social media is very important. You know, I've taken on some clients that when I've looked at their Facebook page or LinkedIn or even their website, there's no blogs. There's, you know, you need to keep up with all these things because right. It's important to people to know that you're on top of it. And that, you know, it's like I tell lawyers, it's kind of in your face marketing, but not really. What you want to do is remind people that you're there so that when they go, oh, you know what? I need a personal injury attorney. So-and-so has been emailing me. I think I'll call him. You know, right. So I look at some of these people's Facebook pages for their businesses and they have like 12 followers. And I'm like, what's the point here? 12 yeah. people that, you know what I mean? So, you know, it's hiring good people. And that right now has been very tough, especially with COVID and the pandemic, and everybody wants to work at home and people want more money than what they deserve. And then they're really working only 20 hours a week and, you know, getting paid for 40. And, you know, just like those are all the kind of things that somebody like me needs to stay on top of. Right. You know, what I tell attorneys is, however many hours you're spending doing administrative stuff, let's say it's 30, okay? Take those 30 hours and multiply it by what you bill a client for, and that's how much money you're losing by attending to the administrative stuff instead of being the lawyer.
Right.
You know, so it's just a matter of seeing what's going on, where there's cracks in the system, where things are leaking through or whatever, and just getting everything together so that everything is going in the same direction.
Right.
They all have the potential to make the money.
Right. So I hear, I mean, we've talked about planning, but organization is part of that key, right? Like we're talking about that, you know, mapping out systems and procedures and giving, you know, writing things down and delegating what, you know, I was always told, consider yourself making $1,000 an hour. Anything that you can delegate for less than that should be delegated, right? Because the idea being that your opportunity cost is that $1,000. If you could be building if you could be billing that time to a client, but instead you're having to do that administrative work, as you say, you know, and it's, especially if it's $35, $55, even $75 an hour, right? Like if you could be billing, you know, $300, $400 an hour, you're losing out on that much that per hour that you're doing. But every business is different, right? Like, I mean, you can't, like, what works for an attorney might not work for another type of service provider, right? There's, you know, like, for instance, a chiropractor, you know, they have different mechanisms that, you know, they do so many adjustments per day. And then there's other businesses that, you know, there's products involved that then there's costs of goods sold that they have to worry about. So there's lots of different things, but taking strategy and planning and then commitment to that strategy and planning. I think I've worked for numerous companies in my life and they'll do a good game of planning, but they do a terrible job of implementing. You know, they'll plan. They'll have so many dang meetings about planning and you're like, woo. And then it's no. And then
nobody
does it or nobody sees if it'll even work. They just keep doing it the same way they've always done it. Right. Cause that's what works for them. And so one of the things I talk about is it's not just about planning. It's about implementing. If you're going to go to all the trouble of planning something, right, then try implementing it too before you give it up, right? Like, you don't know if it's going to work or not work. And if it doesn't work, then change your plan, right? Or change how you get there. Don't necessarily change your plan. Change how you get there. Let's see. What?
Well, I have a client right now who we've been looking at the billable hours for the firm and trying to figure out, like, where they're losing money. Mm-hmm. And the problem is that people are not billing. Like, they're not even doing 100 hours a month. They're doing 30. So I talked to the attorney and I said, listen, we're going to email these people. We're going to stay on top of them. We're going to make sure that they do their 100 hours a month. And the attorney said to me, yeah, good luck. That's not going to work. Well, what do you mean it's not going to work? You know, you're the boss. This is how it goes. And, you know, they have to do it. They have to do it, you know? So if you have that kind of a defeatist attitude, nah, never mind, that won't work. No, that won't work. You know, then there's nothing I or anybody can do for you as long as you feel, you know, like that's how it's going to be. I mean.
Yeah. That's very true. I experienced that with my parents. I would give them suggestions on things to try. They were carpet cleaners, so very different world. I would give them suggestions on what to try, and they'd be like, oh, we already tried that. I'm like, but did you? You know, it really comes down to, and if someone, what doesn't make sense to me, and I wouldn't put up with this if I had someone that I was, you know, billing out by the billable hour, which I don't do the billable hour. I flat rate only. But anyway, what they're missing out on is if they're not billing appropriately and then the firm isn't getting paid appropriately, then they might not have a job because you can't afford to keep someone on that's only billing enough to cover your salary, right? Like, right. The whole purpose of the billable, while I don't use it, is, you know, to, there's a percentage that goes to the employee, the percentage that goes to the firm, and then so on and so forth. But if you're not billing that, if you're not adequately billing for the time that you're spending on things, then you're robbing your business. You're robbing the owner of the business of that money and the opportunity for growth, right? Like, especially when you're in a small firm, you need every penny you can get. I don't know anybody that can not use it, but you know what I'm saying. Like, you don't have the same support staff. So how do you get there? If you don't want to be doing everything, if you just want to be doing your lawyer work and you just want to have a legal, you know, a receptionist and a paralegal and do the lawyer stuff yourself, where's that money going to come from? If you're not billing appropriately, it isn't coming from anywhere. You're being taxed by your own inadequacy on that one, right? Like, that's literally your failure to grow is your own fault, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And if I was the law firm owner, I would say you're out of here, right? Like, if, because you're costing him money, like, legit, it's like, what? Like, so you're just happy with being where you are and you have no desire. Like, that's a very disservice, disloyal attitude. Like, but it goes both ways, right? Like, the employer's got to be loyal to them and the employee's got to be loyal. It's got to be a mutual agreement there. And that just, you know, allows that to go forward. And it's like, why are you doing that? You're accepting mediocrity. And what does that say about what your clients are getting from that person? That's another issue entirely.
Yeah, so, right. You're exactly right.
Let's see. What else? What other nuggets of wisdom? What do you want to share? What is it that if there's one thing you could say to somebody that's doing this stuff, you know, what is it that you could say? Yeah, this is it. This is where the money's at, right? Like, this is my money. This is the thing that always sees results. What's that?
That's a good question. I can't really think of one thing, to be honest with you. You know, it's kind of a culmination of everything.
Okay.
But, you know, like I said, the only thing that I would, you know, say to attorneys or to anybody starting a business for that matter is stick with it. And, you know, if you're going to do it, just go all the way, right. You know, never give up. So,
yeah, I like that. Good. Well, I thank you so much for coming on. I think if you have anything else you'd love to share, I'd be happy to have that.
Here is my book. Let me see. I'm getting a glare. There we go. Okay. Well, this is Hacking Billable Hours. It's available on Amazon.
Okay.
Yay. And this is my other book, From Lawyer to Law Firm. Oh, there we go. Anyway, you can buy them. Now, this is interesting. You can buy this on my website for $49. Uh-huh. The publisher is selling it on Amazon for $149.
Oh, wow.
The reason that I sell it for $49 is because the law schools have their students buy it. And I knew students are always broke and, you know, books are expensive. So I figured I'd cut them some slack.
Yeah, no, I hear that. Like, student wise, I appreciate that. I teach business law down at the community college, and they're always asking me, can I do without the book? And I'm like, sorry. And I don't set any of that. Like, they don't ask my opinion on anything. So,
yeah, no, I know. It's, I mean, sometimes the books are almost as much as the class, you know? So,
yeah,
I get it. I totally get it.
Well, thank you so much, Liz, for coming on and joining me on the podcast. I sincerely appreciate it. Where can my listeners and followers find you if they're interested in your services?
Well, they can email me at liz.managementconsultant@gmail.com. My website, which you already gave, but I'll call it From Lawyer to Law Firm, and I'm also on Facebook and LinkedIn.
Very cool. Well, thank you again so much. Thank you for joining me, and I look forward to hearing the many years of success from you.
Thank you so much for having me. It really has been fun, and I think that maybe I had only like one blip. So.
Oh, no, you're good. Don't worry about it. All right.
Thank
you. Well, that was Elizabeth Miller. I'm so grateful for the time that she spoke and spent with us. As always, the secret sauce, it's really about planning and execution. So please reach out to her if you're at all interested in her services. I'm sure she would appreciate any more business. I can't think of anybody that doesn't need those types of things. So until next time, think tactically. Don't forget to hit subscribe and like, and give me 5 stars in podcasts world, because I know that they like to see those types of things. I'd love to produce more content for you. So thank you so much, and have a great week.